Bulls are out of timeouts. 2 seconds left. Giddy for the win.
Through the city where the legends play, Chi-town vibes on a sunny day. Big red bus with the seats in line, talking Bulls all day, we stay on the grind. Rolling down the lane in the big red bus, see Red, Fred, and Doug bring the Bulls to discuss. From the Jordan days to the present fuss, it's gold in the convo, so ride with us.
Everybody, welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the streets of Chicago on a beautiful, hot summer day in August. I look to my right, and lo and behold, it's a great one. Doug Tonis, how you doing, brother? So good to see you, DT.
I'm living the dream. You know, everything's going well. We're only a month and a half away from preseason. So, you know, that's good news. Maybe 2 months away from the first game, but a month and a half away from camp opening.
It's incredible how quickly it's approaching. I mean, football is on the horizon. Best month of the year, I'd argue, for all sports watching is October. And there's not a lot to do right now in the dog days of summer besides enjoy the summer in terms of sports watching. You know, also the Cubs. I'm a huge Cub fan, and that hasn't been that enjoyable lately. But I don't know about you. I can't wait for the season to get started.
I am always excited for basketball, regardless of how excited I am for our particular team. I think maybe as time's morphed on, I'm usually just happy to watch basketball. Like, I enjoy watching when times are bad. I enjoy watching all of the players who might develop when times are good. I enjoy watching the wins. So I kind of enjoy it no matter what. I think the last few years were tough because you didn't really have a lot of prospects to watch, and you also weren't so excited about the immediate results. And so this year, I think, you know, we've got some prospects to root for. You're hoping Modest is going to do well, hoping Noah Asenge is going to do well. And, you know, assuming we get him back under contract to see what Josh Giddey will bring in another year. So I think this year has a little bit more of a fun dynamic to it than the past couple of years, where you felt like you were just waiting for them to pull the plug.
So speaking of Josh Giddey, it sounds like there's a lot of rumors out there that they may be looking at a three-year contract. The Bulls seem to be holding pretty close to that $20 million per year number that's been reported. And obviously Josh, I'm sure, wants 30. That's not going to happen if it looks like if the cards that we've currently been dealt all come out as we expect them to be. That said, how do you feel about like a 3-year deal from anywhere between 20 and 25 million? Is that something that you think is good for the org, or would you have preferred to see Josh Giddey on a longer term deal?
I don't know that it matters, to be honest. I mean, I don't really think Josh Giddey is a good enough player that I can get too worked up about it one way or the other. Like, the only thing that's really going to kill you with Josh Giddey, most likely, is that you just pay him too much and he becomes the next Patrick Williams or Nikola Vucevic, if he becomes that bad. That's not to say that that's what's going to happen with Josh. But, like, if he just comes out and he kills it and he's a superstar, then you could just pay him afterwards, after the 3 years, and it'll be fine. And he'll be worth it. You know, so I think the only thing that's really a really negative scenario is just if you pay him a ton and he becomes an albatross. If you pay him market value, it's fine. And so, you know, 3 years doesn't give you much risk either, right? Like, even if you overpay him, but it's 3 years, it kind of even doesn't matter all that much. So, you know, is what it is. We'll see what happens for both sides. I think they'll end up at 25 million. And I am going to guess it's going to be a 3-year with a fourth-year player option. At, you know, 4-100 with the last year being a player option is what I think they'll land on. But we'll see.
I'm going to throw out a few names. I just want you to stop me when you would rather have Josh Giddey. I think the first eight are going to be just me reciting names. SGA, Luka, Jalen Brunson, Steph Curry, Cade Cunningham, Ja Morant, Damian Lillard.
Okay.
Obviously is.
I mean, I'd rather have Josh Giddey than Damian Lillard.
Trae Young, Tyrese Halliburton, James Harden.
Maybe I would rather have Josh Giddey than Tyrese Halliburton.
How about Trae Young?
Only because he just tore his Achilles. You know, and it's kind of like, given that you might have to pay Trae Young $200 million, I'd probably rather have Josh Giddey.
I agree.
Like $25 million.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, if you're going to ignore a contract and you're just going to look at price, I'd rather have Trae Young.
Yeah.
And I'd probably rather have Halliburton. I just get really scared of guys who have an Achilles injury. That's like such a difficult injury to come back from. And maybe that's like old school in my head, and people like medical science has recovered to make that better than it used to be. It used to be just such a death sentence. And maybe that's not really true anymore. It's hard to say, 'cause medical science improves so quickly, and you don't have so many Achilles issues that you really get to see how much guys improve. But that injury with Halliburton definitely is scary.
Mike Conley, I think we both agree I'd rather have Josh Giddey.
Yeah, I mean, at this age, sure.
Kyrie Irving?
That's an interesting one. But, you know, he's also got a major injury, so I'd rather have Giddey than Irving, given he's going to probably miss this whole year.
And a big contract. Here's a couple more that make it a little bit more difficult. Jalen Suggs.
I don't know. I haven't watched enough Jalen Suggs to have a really strong opinion about it. I would guess, like, Jalen Suggs, I probably would rather have Suggs, but they're just such radically different players that it's not really much of a comparable.
Mm-hmm. How about Fred VanVleet, even though not a true point guard, but he kind of plays that
yeah,
role?
Yeah, I'd say he's a point guard.
Yeah, I mean, plays that role a bit.
I'd probably rather have VanVleet, but that also depends, like, are we talking for a year or, you know, it's like, because VanVleet's a lot older, like, yeah, I'd probably take VanVleet next year over Giddey, but I mean, I don't know. Like, at his age, I'm not sure what it is off the top of my head, but I feel like there's probably some age risk there. And maybe over like 4 years, I'd probably rather have Giddey. But I think he's in like the VanVleet tier of player.
How about Stephon Castle?
I mean, I'd rather have Castle.
Tyler Hero.
Again, about the same. And this is all ignoring contract. Like, I forget. I think Hero, is he on like the 25% max deal? I feel like he is. I'm not sure off the top of my head. Like, Giddey's deal will probably be better than Hero's deal.
I agree. A couple more. Darius Garland.
I mean, as the player, I'd rather have Garland. I'm not sure what his contract is off the top of my head either.
Yeah, I think Josh is probably in the 12 to 22, probably closer to 12 for me, probably closer to 22 for you, in terms of players that you'd want to play the point guard position in the NBA today.
I think that's just a poor way to look at it. Like, I don't like saying where you are in a point guard ranking doesn't mean anything to me. It's like, how much, what do you do and how much do you get paid for it? And so if you're going to look at all the contracts, then I think there's a lot of like super overpaid guards. And then it just depends where Josh Giddey comes in. Like, if he comes in at $25 million, I think his deal is going to be fine, even despite all of his weird wonky flaws and stuff you have to work around. You know, if he came in at like $35 million, then I would hate that deal. And so where he ranks as a player amongst point guards wouldn't change any, but it, you know, so like the ranking isn't as important as the contract price, I guess, is my point. It's like, he could be the 14th best point guard and be on a bad deal, or he could be the 14th best point guard and be on a good deal. And you could think he's the same as a player and like or not like him on your roster, depending on the price.
We're going to assume, just for the state of this argument, Josh Giddey's going to sign somewhere between 20 and 25 million per year. I think that's almost a certainty. And so with that in mind, you know, where does he rank, you know, compared to like Stephon Castle? I'll be honest, I'd rather have, if you're trying to win, I'd rather have Josh Giddey next year for 1 year and Stephon Castle, but long term.
Yeah, I mean, Castle is the upside play, right? I mean, that's like, that's maybe a totally different, I mean, he's on a rookie deal. That's a completely different thing. You're projecting a lot of hope onto Castle. Like, so it's, I think that's like a poor comparison only because they're in very different stages. Like, taking a guy where you just don't know where his ceiling at and comparing him to Josh, where I think we kind of have a pretty good feel for where Josh Giddey's ceiling is at, in comparison anyway. So, you know, if you go to those other guys, like maybe like Quickly, Emmanuel Quickly is like another guy you could say, would you rather have Quickly or Giddey? And like on Quickly's contract, I'd rather have Giddey. If there was just the player, I would maybe rather have Quickly. But that gets into the point exactly where I talked about. It's like Quickly as a guy, like as a player I like, but on a contract, I hate him. And so, you know, that's the thing with negotiating the contract well. Like, and I think if it's around 25 million, I think we'll have successfully done that. I think that'll be a deal that you're okay with Josh Giddey, because in the short term, he's a guy who can fill a valuable role as like, you know, stuffing all these stats on a not very good team. And then at 25 million, even though he's got all these wonky flaws, if you get better players, his contract isn't killing you if you have to move him to the bench or he becomes like the fourth or fifth option, like down the line, like you can still kind of live with him there. So, you know, I think that's a deal that you feel good about having Josh Giddey on.
All right. I'm going to name two players that I think are better than Josh Giddey, but their contracts are so much more that I think I'd rather have Josh Giddey. So I'll throw one out. Jamal Murray.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
And what about De'Aaron Fox?
Oof, that's a tough one. I have so much more confidence in Fox in like high leverage moments because I think he can defend and play on offense and he's been amazingly clutch. So like in high leverage moments, Fox has been really good. And that's like the opposite of Giddey, but like the contract is a lot for what I think Fox brings to the table. So that's like a toss up. And I guess you could say a lot of those same things about Jamal Murray, except probably I think Fox could defend better than him in a high leverage situation. But Murray's been like ultra clutch in offense historically in the past. But then he's just had so many injury history, like problems like the past few years. Like I just have no trust in Jamal Murray, like playing at a high level again.
Yeah. What about LaMelo Ball?
I would probably rather have Josh Giddey than LaMelo Ball, given the contract situation.
Yeah. I think it all comes down to if they get him at 20 per year, I think it's a good deal for the Bulls. I do.
It's not going to be 20, dude. It's going to be 25.
Okay.
Like, it's not going to be 20. I mean, there's no way it's going to be 20. The Bulls are offering 20 now. They're going to move. They're not going to hold firm at 20.
It'll be between 20 like, and 25. But regardless, even if it's 25, it's going to be cheaper than LaMelo. And LaMelo is a better player,
yeah, if it's,
no doubt, but he doesn't play. You know, that's another thing about Giddey.
Not a whole lot better player either. Like, I don't know. Like, LaMelo Ball actually seems like a pretty reasonable comparison to Josh Giddey in a lot of ways. Maybe the most comparable player to Josh Giddey in the league in terms of, like, great passer, not a great shooter. Historically was not a good defender. I don't watch like a whole ton of LaMelo Ball or anything, but like a lot of the same traits you would talk about with Giddey fit with Ball too. The Ball definitely seems like he can create more against a strong defense than Giddey can, which is maybe the crux of the problem with Giddey. But yeah, either way, like I think if we end at 25 million, we'll be fine with Josh Giddey.
Absolutely. And then I'll embrace him. And I do kind of hope for once that we go with a team option as opposed to I think the Bulls might relent and do a player option, 3 year. It'll probably be 3 years, 75.
They're not going to do three in a player option. They might do three plus a player option. So it's a 4 year with a fourth year being a player option.
Yeah.
And I'd be okay with that, you know, because the 375 is like a deal you'd take. And then you add the fourth-year player option to give him a little extra security if things go really badly. I think that's still pretty reasonable.
I wouldn't want that, though. That's my point. For the
Well, no, of course you don't want it.
Yeah,
of course. A player option is bad. Duh, no doubt. But, like, that contract is still fine. Like, you know, it's like it's not that much to give in, given, like, all the guys we just named and how much they make versus Giddey. To offer him the extra security if things go badly for him, you know, seems okay relative to how much money he's taking less compared to other guys.
Yeah. All right. We've really kind of been, you know, Debbie Downer for most of the last year and a half, 2 years, maybe 5 years now, ever since these guys took over. Going back to last time the Bulls were good, which is essentially January of 2022. Well, they had some good streaks in there, 14-9 at the end of the I can't remember exactly what season was that, 23?
I don't think we were excited about those good streaks, though. They had good streaks, but I mean, like, yeah, well.
I was pretty excited.
Okay. I think the 21-22 season? That was the LaMelo or Lonzo Ball, Caruso, whatever season. Yeah, that season was legitimately exciting at the beginning of the year, all weird caveats of COVID and other stuff aside. You know, outside of that season, I don't know when the last time you were excited about this team was, but probably like 2016.
Three alphas. When they were up 2-0 on Boston, I was losing my
and
mind.
Even that team, I was not excited about that team like going into the year or even most of the year. You know, I just felt like this is such a short-term fool's gold. You're not building anything here. There are a lot of weird caveats to that, but I think you'd really, for me, have to go back to, you know, the Derrick Rose – Pau Gasol year as the last year where I was like legitimately somewhat excited. And I thought it was a long shot, but maybe Rose would, would kind of step back up, and Jimmy Butler was kind of emerging. And, you know, that was probably the last year I had genuine excitement at the beginning of the season. And then, yeah, that 21-22 season, you definitely had some excitement for a while, and then it just failed, you know, at the end of the year, just completely fell off the map. But, yeah, it's not been really a lot where you just were really thrilled as a Bulls fan, you know, in recent history.
Yeah, you hit on the last year when you went into the playoffs thinking that the Bulls could potentially make noise was a 2014-15 team. Gasol's first year after he signed as a free agent, they won 50 games in a regular season. Very underrated team. Dominated Milwaukee for the most part, won in six games in the first round. Went on to the second round and were up, when Rose hit that shot, 2-1.
2-1, yeah.
Yeah, and Gasol in that game got hurt. And when Gasol was out, team at that point, oh my gosh, that was Noah faded massively down the stretch in that season and really became a shell of himself on both ends of the floor. And it was over as soon as Gasol went out. But that, you're right. That was really the last legitimate time. I also felt like the next season, people kind of forget. That was Hoiberg's first year. People forget just the insane amount of injuries that they had in the second half of the year. It all happened at one time. I mean, I think they lost six guys. Taj, everybody was out, you know, right kind of down the stretch, and they still finished around 500. I think they were 500 that year, but they did not make the playoffs. Regardless, let's get off this topic because it's making me depressed.
Yeah.
But I do want to
– good call.
I do want to get on to, hey, what is the best case scenario for this year? Like, let's say – what do you think are the factors that have to happen to make this team a surprise? Like, Vegas has them at 32 wins. I think we're both in agreement. I think they're going to be better than that in a just a horrific East. But like, what's it going to take? What do you think is the high end for this team? Like, how many wins could they possibly win? And what are the most important things that you think, you know, starting with 1, 2, and 3 to happen for this team to drastically exceed expectations?
How crazy do the things have to be? Like, you could invent a scenario where the Bulls win the title next year if you just go over like really crazy, right? Like, so how within realistic? Like, say like 1% chance, 10% chance, like how realistic?
Well, how about this? Let me start out. I'll give you my number one. And then you could jump on,
sure,
based on what I'm about to say. Because I think this is realistic, what I'm about to say. I think there's like a 50% chance of this. All right. So for me, my number one, it's
50% chance. You think this is a 50% chance? I just want, just clearly stating this, the scenario you're about to put forth.
Yes.
You think there's a 50-50 chance this happens?
I think it's a 50-50 chance for this specific player.
Start out before you tell me what happens, how many wins we're going to get if this happens.
Five wins. Five more wins than expected.
Oh, so 37. This is going to be a 37 win team if this happens.
Here's why. Because I think the Bulls are going to win 36.
Okay, so you think the Bulls' realistic upside is 41 wins?
No. I think it's more. I'm just saying if this happens, part one, there's...
Okay. I just want to hear, like, what is your best case scenario?
Okay.
I wanted to hear this.
So it starts and ends with Isaac Okoro. So finally,
okay,
he's going to be...
Just number of wins. Number of wins. What's your best case number of wins?
Let me explain.
I wanted the number up first, but okay, I'll let you explain. You clearly want to build up to it.
Because he's the player. This has to happen for them to take that jump. If you look at the Bulls last year, I mean, their defense, they were ranked 19th, I think, in defensive efficiency, which is a freaking miracle. I'd argue their best perimeter defender was probably Io, and he missed the entire second half of the season. So what they did to close the year, the way they did without any real stoppers on the perimeter, I actually thought was pretty freaking impressive and pretty insane. I don't think Patrick Williams is a defensive stopper. And if you don't believe me, just go back and, you know, rewatch that, his pathetic lateral defense on the end of that Lakers game. I think it was Austin Reeves that blew by him for that layup before, Giddy hit the miracle shot. Lateral quickness for Patrick Williams has always been a problem. That's why I always said he's best against like bigger guards, power forwards. You know, where he's able to kind of use his size and strength. So to me, it was a miracle what happened last year. The Bulls played that good. But if you want to restore perimeter defense to a satisfactory level, that starts with Isaac becoming that effective, dependable guy that you can throw at the best ones, twos, and threes that were playing and say, go shut him down. And he's done that many times for the Cavs. He did that for the Cavs against Zach LaVine, you know, many times. So that's the defensive side of Isaac Okoro. If we really want to hit a homer and hit that 5-win extra mark, it starts on the offensive side where you kind of like, I don't know, what's the word for it? Push towards like his offensive ceiling as a transition player. So all the metrics show he's very good in transition, all the advanced metrics. But he played on a Cavs team 2 years ago that was one of the slowest, most plodding offenses in the league. And then last year, although they were much faster, they still weren't anywhere near the Bulls. I think they were about 10. So Okoro, if you simply get him to operate in the Bulls' faster system and you combine that with his defensive chops, I think you're talking about a guy who could result in 5 extra wins just by being a legit two-way player. And seeing Okoro break out as a valuable contributor on both ends would be absolutely huge for his team. And I think that's the best, most realistic case for 5 more wins. What say you?
I don't think there's anywhere that adds 5 wins, but I agree that would be a great... Like, I don't think what you're saying is unreasonable from what Okoro might do on this team, but I don't think that adds 5 wins.
Okay, but you think it's possible? Like, what would you say the percentage of this happening?
I mean, I think it's likely that Okoro will be a good defensive player and that he'll be good in transition. Like, those are things he's good at. Like, those are his strengths. Like, I think he will do those things. Like, it's like 80% he's going to do those things. Does he do them well enough to generate like 5 wins? No, like those things are not going to generate 5 wins.
Okay. Fair enough. Who was doing that last year at that role at the 3?
I mean, no one, but it's kind of like then other people do different things that help you in different ways.
How many wins? Let's say he does that. Let's say Coral comes out. Now he's in Chicago, major city. People are like, wow, this guy is a freaking great defender.
So yeah, let's say he does that, but then you take Kevin Huerter off the floor and now you don't have any shooting.
Oh, no.
And so it's like, yeah, well, Kevin Huerter played really great for the Bulls last year and he added 3-point shooting. Eh. We really need 3-point shooting because none of our big men can shoot and Giddey can't shoot. And so if you have an offense with like 4 guys who can't shoot, then your offense sucks in the half court. And while you might be good in transition, you aren't going to be in transition every play. And then you're going to just be god awful every other play. Because you can triple team everyone who has the ball because no one can like hurt you when you do it. So like, I'm not saying like, oh, Kevin Huerter is the best. I'm just saying like, you know, he's another guy who's going to add like some things that are really useful. And then he's going to do some other things that really hurt you. Like guys are going to go blow past Kevin Huerter. And so, you know, Isaac Okoro will do different things that are good and then he'll hurt you in different ways. And, you know, like that's just how role players are, right? Like even Alex Caruso is a guy who's a really great role player. You know, like there's some scenarios where it's like on offense, it's like he can't create. And then that could cause you some congestion if you don't have other guys next to him that are going to alleviate that problem. And so yeah, I expect Okoro to help us. Don't get me wrong. I think his role is going to be valuable. But that's why I don't think it's going to add 5 wins is because unless he becomes a really good 3-point shooter, and that's like the swing thing, it's like pretty unlikely. But if he became a really good 3-point shooter, and now all of a sudden he's like a legit 3-and-D guy and he's spacing the floor, then that would be the thing that would like add 5 wins. Like now he becomes this like universally great fitting player. But I think that no longer is in the likely realm. Whereas the things you named, I agree, are likely to happen.
I think you're just overestimating what the league thinks of Kevin Huerter. Do you know what he shot last year from 3 overall? Without looking it up.
What did he shoot for the Bulls?
37.6%. You know what Okoro shot last year?
Yeah.
That's what he shot for the Bulls.
But
overall, Huerter shot 33.8%. He was horrible
for
Sacramento. But
as I said, what he shot for the Bulls.
Yeah, hold on
and he shot better in the past.
26 games for the Bulls, 37.6%. Isaac Okoro shot 37.1%. Now I agree with you.
How many attempts did they have per minute?
Yeah, I know I don't have it in front of me, and I'm sure that those are all in a Herder's.
Well, favor.
But if he's
not
that
because
much
it's
better.
About how quickly you get your. It's not the percentage. 3-point percentage is the new dumbass stat that everyone looks at, like total rebounds or something, because it's not about your percentage. It's about how quick you can get the shot up, how quickly you can get it off, and how much you force the defense to react to you. Guys are not defending Isaac Okoro and Kevin Huerter the same
on
the 3-point line, and you know it.
I'd agree.
So it's a totally different thing. You say you disagree?
No, I agree. I agree. They're going to pay more attention to Herter. I'm not saying that.
Yeah, but that makes a huge, huge difference on your half-court offense when someone is paying attention to the guy at the three-point line than when they're not, which you have ranted on specifically lots and lots of times. So I'm just saying it's different. I'm not saying that makes Isaac Okoro bad and Kevin Herter great. Like, it doesn't. It just means they offer very different things to the team, and the team needs both, and they can't get both in one player. If Isaac Okoro becomes a player where they can get both in one player, that's going to be amazing. I think that scenario is unlikely. The scenario where he's really good at all the things you just named is very likely. And they still need that. I'm not saying that makes him a bad player. They still really need that. But it's a difference between him being like a guy who adds 5 wins. That's a really, really high bar to add, by the way. Like, I don't know if you're just don't understand how high of a bar 5 wins is, but that's a huge bar to put on a single player.
No doubt.
It's like all-star level stuff. So for him to add 5, he's got to also become a really great shooter. You know, for him to add, say, 2 wins, like what you just said, that might add 2 wins, and that's still a fantastic get if he adds 2 wins. Okay. Like, that's fantastic for a role player to add 2 wins.
So what would you say? That's my number one, though. So it's all in Isaac Okoro.
Okay, that's your number one.
What's your number one?
I mean, number one is just Josh Giddey being post All-Star break Josh Giddey and not being pre All-Star break Josh Giddey. It's like number one by a million.
Okay, that's a good. That's not in my top three, but anyhow. But that's,
I mean, that's like number one by just this. That's a number one by everything, right? Like if you go through all the discourse on Josh Giddey, and I'm involved in it a lot on Real GM, you basically have like two camps of people. Like, one camp is like, I have selectively forgotten every single thing that happened in Josh Giddey's career prior to the All-Star break of last season. And then the other camp is like this guy can't shoot and he can't defend. And what good is a guy who can just pass and rebound? Like, it's kind of, if you want to just make the extreme examples of these camps, like, that's where they are. And like, it doesn't have to be binary that it's going to be only one or only the other, but you know, like, he was two radically different players. Like, up until the All-Star break, I was like, I would not pay this guy the mid-level exception. And now I'm like, yeah, $25 million a year. And I wouldn't even hate it so much if they went more, as long as it wasn't on too many years. And so, you know, if he's that second guy, that's really, really important. If he's post-All-Star break Josh Giddey, and if he's pre-All-Star break Josh Giddey, like, the team is screwed.
I agree with everything you said there. I just had it at number, believe it or not, number four, because I do feel like he's going to be, to me, him returning to how he was in the first 50 games last year is off the table. Like, I don't think he's going to play as good. There was a lot of things going on with a new role, new team. You had Zach LaVine.
There was a lot of things going on after the All-Star break too, my friend.
More opportunities for him. Zach LaVine wasn't taking his opportunities at that time.
You think he's going to shoot 46% from three?
No, I agree. I mean, that's unsustainable for him to do that.
As soon as he doesn't do that, his scoring efficiency sucks again.
I'm going to step out on a limb here. Get ready for this.
All right.
Profit. Ready? Josh Giddey's numbers this year are going to be somewhere between what he did for the first 50 games and the last 20. How's that?
I think this will be a correct prediction. I think this will be a correct prediction from our resident prophet. I agree. I agree with this one. This will be in your 93% accurate tweets or whatever it is. So, and the University of Idaho will be proud of this one.
Well, that's a very good. So that's number one. I think probably the vast majority of people who are listening to this are going to agree with you on that. You want to hear my number two, and then we'll go to you, or do you want to do two, and then I'll give my two?
Sure. No, give me your number two.
So my number two is the leap from Kobe. Another leap from Kobe. So
another leap from
Kobe. Yeah, in terms of what the Bulls optimizing the ceiling, like, I think this is almost as important as Okoro, and that means Kobe White, like, breaking through another ceiling that 98% of the fan base has already put on him every year. I think we've seen what his ceiling looks like. It was what he did in March as an Eastern Conference Player of the Month. I mean, that was just freaking insane. And that's the blueprint. If he can, like, sustain that, something close to that level for an entire season, well, number one, he's going to be an All-Star. And not only that, I think he could be pushing for, you know, All-NBA if you're playing like he did in March. So that's, to me, with Tyrese Halliburton out, the guard spot is sitting there. Kobe White's got a real chance to kind of, like, grab that and plant himself in the conversation as a clear top 25 NBA player and All-Star this year in the Eastern Conference. And it starts with him hitting the three at a higher clip. So last year he shot it. Most people just, I think, assume, oh, he's a great shooter. He shot 37% last year, which is actually like, I think that's his 1 point or percentage point below his career. He's actually below that. He's at 36.9% career. So he's actually 37%, just a little bit higher than his career percentage. If he can even climb to 38%, that is a monumental climb. If he can get to 40, I mean, we're talking about a whole different player here. He's pulling people out 35, 40 feet. He's getting to the line. He knocks down free throws at a high rate. I really think there's a higher ceiling for Kobe. And if he achieves that in terms of an all-star, I think that's going to be another 5 wins. So what say you?
I think the way you throw 5 wins out is like really insane. Like you just feel like 5 wins is just like, I just think that's like a really insane number. I will say, you know, what's interesting is that Kobe is kind of basically in the same camp as Giddey. If I was going to rephrase your statement a little bit, I just say Kobe just needs to be post All-Star break Kobe versus pre All-Star break Kobe. Like, and you know, there's like a 6 point per game difference. His efficiency was like way up in the second half of the year. And if he's that guy, then it makes a huge difference. I don't think the percentage really actually matters all that much on the 3 point shots to be different. If you were to take the difference between what he did last year and ramped it up to 40%, it would be 16 more threes made on the season. So like one extra 3-pointer made like every 6 games. I just don't think that would make that big a difference, which is why I said 3-point percentage is not really such a big factor. I think Kobe is actually a really great shooter already, despite the percentage being where it is, because it's the amount of volume you can get up and still be decent in percentage, and then like the threat that creates. Like, I think people guard Kobe extremely tightly at the 3-point line now. Like, I think people are scared of Kobe as a 3-point shooter as it stands today. And like, that's the biggest factor on how it impacts the opposing defense, is if people are really scared of you. And I think people are scared of Kobe already. It'd be great if he ramps it up a little bit, but I think the main thing is he just needs to continue to get up a ton of attempts and then, you know, be like 37% plus. If he was 40%, but the attempts were the same, I think it would have a relatively minimal impact on the season. Would certainly look better statistically, but I don't think it would really have much of an impact. But getting up all those attempts at a good percentage. And then really, I think the bigger thing is just that he was getting to the free throw line so much more. And then I think it's like having a good 2-point percentage also becomes like an important thing that he's not like always had in the past. And so I think that'll be a big thing. Playing inside better and finishing inside and drawing the fouls, I think is like the things I would like to see from him. Like he drew a crap ton of fouls in the second half of the season that he did not draw in the first half of the season. So that would be the piece I would need to see stay the same. But Kobe and Giddey combined, if you look at their post All-Star break versus their pre All-Star break, that's why the Bulls were so good in the post All-Star break. And then we get into the caveats of like, who did they play and all this other stuff that goes into that. But if those guys are the same guys against a full season, like then this team is actually really good. And I think fundamentally, no one believes they're those guys, right? That's why our Vegas has our over under at 32 wins.
Yeah.
Because if people really believe we were those guys over a whole season, I mean, they give us at least 41, right? Like they were, what was it, like 19 and 7 or something at the close? I forget the exact numbers now.
17 or something. I thought 17 and 10 or something. Second half of the year.
Whatever it was, right? Like, we'd be over 500 if they thought these guys could do this over a season. So no one thinks that, right? Like, literally no one thinks that. Or else, like, the over-under would be dramatically higher, and all Bulls fans would be way more positive. Like, even if we don't say it, like, we don't fundamentally really believe it.
That was mine. What's yours?
I mean, I think I'm going to say the same thing as you, except I'm going to just state it as Kobe White. He doesn't need to take another leap compared to his post All-Star break numbers. He just needs to be the post All-Star break Kobe White for the season. Him and Josh, number 1 and 2, are just doing what they did after the All-Star break over the course of a season. Like, if they could actually prove that level of performance, you know, against a full season, against good teams when it mattered, you know, before everyone starts tanking and all other stuff, this team is going to be much, much better than people think. I don't think that is super likely for either guy, but if it happens, like, they'll actually be a really intriguing team, especially in this very weak East.
So far, I think most of the listeners are probably surprised that, you know, our biggest player in terms of improving the team, we haven't mentioned yet, but you could almost say Matas is also in that same area. Is he going to play like he did in the second half of the season or the first half of the season? Did he make your top three?
You know, because I never, you know, listened to your show notes and I didn't come into this with a top three and I'm now coming up with off the fly, I'm going to be honest, I don't know if Matas makes my top three. I might need a second. Give me your third.
I actually don't have Matas.
While you're giving me your third, I'm going to think through my third, and I might steal one of your ideas. So you right now you have Okoro 1, Kobe 2.
Yeah.
Now you're going to give me your third. I've got Giddy 1, Kobe 2, and I'm thinking in the back of my head.
I actually have 3 and 4 as a tie, and it's not with Matas. Third is Josh Giddy. I'm looking at my notes here. So I did have the Josh Giddy point. Is he the guy in the second half of the year, last 20 games versus the first 50? If he can replicate that or come close to that, Bull's going to be way better. But the other one that I think is equal as important to discuss is the change in Vucevic's role. Like, this has to change. And what I mean by that is his minutes need to come down significantly. So he's on the floor at 31. And I know he had a great year shooting the basketball, and that's all fine and dandy. And that is important. It does help players to get to the rim when he's out there pulling bigs out. I've never felt, even last year, that guys were really coming out aggressively and Vooch.
Yeah, he doesn't pull bigs out. Like, he doesn't. No one cares. Okay. Like, Vooch is out there 3-point line. No one cares.
I think,
like, he shot better. Yeah. He made more shots, but no one cared. Like, no one reacted to it. It was just like Josh Giddey at the end of the year was shooting 46% from three, but no one was out there like, oh crap, I got to guard Josh Giddey out here. They just let him shoot, and he punished them. And Vooch punished people last year with his shooting, but he didn't draw people out. He did not instill fear, and that's why I said the percentage is not nearly as important as how the defense reacts.
That's a good point. He did hurt him, though. I mean, shooting at 40% from three.
He did, yeah. He shot well last year.
Yeah, and compared to the year before where he shot 29%. And I do not believe – I think there's far more likelihood that he'll return to 34 below, which is really going to bring the ceiling on the Bulls' offensive down, because I think he was really good overall on the offensive end last year. What I'm more focused on is why his role needs to change is on the defensive end. Like, I want his minutes to come down. He was basically at his career minutes, which I think is right around 31, 32 last year. I want to come down to like 25, 24. And I want him off the floor as much as possible, because when he's on the court, it's a layup line. The Bulls were absolutely awful in terms of defending the paint, defending the rim. Teams are hunting him over and over again in a pick and roll and punishing us. He's a great rebounder. Everybody will throw that out. Yeah, he's a great rebounder. But of course, that's because he's always parked near the rim because he can't defend anyone on the perimeter. So they're always in a drop D. He's always relatively close to the rim and he gets those rebounds. But he can't switch. He forces you to play a specific type of defensive coverage every freaking single possession he's out there, and the Bulls have zero defensive versatility because of it, and he caps your defensive ceiling. So I want to see a lot more of Zach Collins out there for him. I know he's not as good of a shooter. He's probably not as good offensively as Vooch, but man, oh man, let's put our best defensive lineup on the floor more often than not, because that's the greatest indicator of likelihood of a good team, is how good you are in terms of defensive efficiency. And with Vooch on the court, you know, concrete shoes and all, that's not going to happen. It's just not. And we're always going to be in the bottom half. What say you?
I think Zach Collins, Nikola Vucevic, and Jalen Smith are probably all similar caliber players. And I don't think it will make that big a difference which one you play. I am with you that I probably lean towards Collins, but I don't think it's going to make a huge difference if you play Vooch versus Collins. Kind of like what I talked about with Okoro and Herter. Like, I think they bring different things to the table. If you find ways to use the things they bring, it'll work itself out. Collins would be my choice as the starter. Like, it sounds like he's yours, but I don't think the gap there is going to swing things too much. Unless Vooch completely falls off a cliff. But if Vooch gave you, say, similar performance to last year, say he shoots 36% from three, you know, a decline, but not like a cataclysmic decline. But otherwise, it's about the same. Like, I don't think it'll make that big a difference. I've thought about it. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so you don't agree with my tie for third?
Yeah, I mean, it's... What was the other one you had?
Well, the other one was Josh Giddey, and you're number one.
Oh, Josh Giddey. Yeah. We talked about that. Okay. Yeah, I don't think that'll be as big, only because I think all of these guys are kind of like just a guy centers. Like, they do slightly different things, but I don't think one of them really impacts winning a whole lot more than the other. That's all. Like, I don't think none of them are good enough to move the needle. I agree Collins is the best fit. But I don't think Collins is so much better than Vooch that it makes a huge difference. Like, these are, but he would be my choice to start. Like, so I agree with you. I just don't think it's going to be as big an impact. That's all.
Okay. All good. What do you have?
So I'm going to run through what I have considered briefly in the back of my head. So number one was like Noah Essenge. Essenge. I got to say it correctly. Essenge. It's a little tough for me. Noah Essenge. Being like a really big factor, Patrick Williams returning to kind of like what he was doing early in his career. Like, if he's healthy all offseason, which has been the first time, and he actually comes back athletic again and then like regresses up to 40% shooting, which I think is like not so crazy. Like, everyone hates him now, but like the scenario where that happens, Modest developing into a really good player, like having a really strong sophomore season, and then Ayo Dosunmu kind of like bouncing back. If you look at Ayo, he's almost like every other year, like, you really like what he's done, and then the next year you don't. And like last year was kind of the down year for him, and he had some injury problems, but like, if he is able to stay healthy all year and kind of get his shooting touch back. So those were like the next things that we haven't discussed that kind of like crossed my mind. Yeah, maybe Kevin Huerter having a really good shooting year would be another thing you could consider. But of those things, the ones I have as my kind of tie for third would probably be Modest, Buzelis developing, and Ayo with the bounce back year. And of those, I think Ayo with the bounce back year is more likely. I think people are really high on Modest, but like you see a lot of guys, they kind of struggle in their sophomore year. And I think people's expectations for Modest are like way, way ahead of where he is. I'm really excited about him, but I think it's going to be more of a year three thing where like it all really starts to come together. So I think he's now this next year going to go through more of what I would call like the growing pains year, where he starts being more aggressive, more assertive, starts trying to do more stuff. But with that comes more failure and struggles as the league adapts to him and he starts adapting to the league. And I just think it's going to take one more year for that to have like a really good impact. Not that it couldn't happen next year. I just think it's going to take one more year. And people look at the skills and they can see how it can come together and are really excited about it. So am I. I just think it's going to take another year. But Ayo, I feel like if he just bounces back to like a 40% shooter and he's a good defender and he's this good all-around player, like that really just plugs so many holes. Like, you talked about our perimeter defense not being good. If Ayo becomes kind of like what we talked about with Okoro, the guy who can defend and then also hit threes, and he can pass, he can do a little bit of everything. Like that just glues your roster together so much if you get another guy who can become a legit two-way guy. And I think because he had that kind of like down year last year and because he was playing through some injuries, people have kind of started sleeping on him, on what he could be if he takes a step forward and has a healthy year. So I'm going to go with Ayo as my number three. You know, kind of maybe taking a step forward beyond what we've... Like he already regressed last year, but I think he can not only get back to what he did the year before that, but be even better than that, where he shot 40% from three and was just kind of solid across the board. I don't think his three-point percentage is going to go up so much, but I think he can get back to, like, say, five attempts a game at 40% or near 40%. Again, percentage not, you know, between 37 and 40%, but like higher volume, and kind of contribute in all those other areas and give you good defense. I think if that happens, that just changes so much for this team.
Wouldn't you say, like, would it be impossible, or would you be shocked if Ayo Dosunmu gets votes for Sixth Man of the Year next year? I wouldn't be. I think he's as good as most players coming off the bench.
In the scenario I described, it wouldn't surprise me. I think to be a really good sixth man candidate, the team needs to play really well. So, you know, if the team wins like 47 games, then I think Io will be a sixth man candidate. But if they win like 33 games, it really doesn't matter what he's doing.
He's a guy, though, a great call on him. I mean, if you look last year, he did average double figures. He averaged 12.3 points. The Bulls had seven guys who averaged in double figures. Now, obviously, Trey Jones, believe it or not, averaged 11.5, wasn't with the team all year. And then you had Patrick Williams just outside of that. The team is a deep team. It really is. Like, no one is going to talk about Dalen Terry. I saw enough of Dalen Terry last year that I'm like, all right, this guy absolutely can be a rotation off-the-bench player who will bring energy, good defense. And if he could ever get a semblance of a decent three-point shot, which he started to see a little bit last year, what did he shoot from three last year? He shot 35.6%, which is a massive improvement from where he was. I think Dalen Terry could be a contributing good rotation player coming off the bench, providing defensive versatility. That's just an example. Jalen Smith. Look at the guys at the end of the roster, 11, 12, 13, 14. Much better. I just took a cursory look at some of these. And obviously a lot of that's because a lot of these teams have a guy and are paying him 50 or 60 million a year. And there's only so much you can pay some of these guys at the end of the roster. But this is a pretty deep team. It really is. I don't think it's – we don't have a guy yet. But I think it's a little bit better than – it's definitely better than what Vegas has him at. And I don't think it's crazy, the stuff that we're saying so far. Like, all this could happen.
I agree they're better than what Vegas has them at. But it's like when you look at, like, what's everything that can go right? Like, that's fine. What's everything that can go wrong? Like, you know, an important player – you know, it has an ACL in the first, like, month of the season. Like, say Giddy or Kobe goes down with an ACL. Like, you win 25 games now.
I don't know. I don't agree with that. I the only one I would agree with that is, the only one I would say that is absolutely going to happen is if it's Kobe White. If Giddy goes out, you got Trey Jones, you got Io. It's not like it's a chasm or it's like, it's not like, I don't think it's going to be like a Grand Canyon of difference between I like Trey Jones as a point guard.
I like Trey Jones too.
I like Io. It's not like the team would be suddenly like, oh my God, we're not going to be able to compete. The only guy I kind of feel that would happen with is Kobe. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm right. We'll see. But
I think Kobe is the most important guy because they don't have any other volume shooters on the team.
Correct. Yes.
Maybe Kevin Huerter can be a volume shooter, but like Kevin Huerter's got so many other things going on with him. Like, he's not a – Kobe is maybe the only real scorer. Like, he's their biggest scoring threat.
Yes. Like, he's the guy –
give him the ball and be like, go get me points. Yeah, like if Kobe's out, like, there's no one left on the team that can do that.
Right.
And only having one guy like that is already kind of a problem. Like you usually want, you know, a couple guys like that on your team. And, you know, maybe they need to bring back Talen Horton-Tucker off the bench as the like super emergency guy who could just give the ball and be like, just go be a bowling ball and try and get me some points and
pass.
He could do that occasionally.
Hard pass. He's not on the roster. I definitely don't want him back.
I don't think he'll be on the roster. I don't think we're going to worry about it. I think the problem is it's like whoever their best guy is like one of the worst best guys in the league. Whoever their second best guy is one of the worst second best guys in the league. And then whoever their third best guy is probably also one of the worst third best guys in the league. And then, yeah, they're strong maybe from like 4 to 10. But if you lose 1 through 3 against every team you play, you're kind of in trouble. It's hard to make that up in depth. So that's the problem. And I guess that's why we get back to what I said is my number one and number two, because post All-Star break, Josh Giddey and Kobe White were not going to be so much worse than everyone else. Like, for those 25 odd games or whatever it is, like, they played like legitimate top tier players. And, you know, it's just fundamentally, even though we don't explicitly say it, no one believes that's going to happen over a season, or else we'd be talking about the Bulls as like a 47 win team.
Well, on that note, DT, believe it or not, we've already been talking, holy smokes, for almost 15 minutes.
So in all the stuff we talked about, what's your win total then? Like, if in the best case scenario,
if
we have no major negative events happen, no major injuries, And the big three things you mentioned happen, your big three, which is, we'll just say Josh Giddey, Coby White, and Isaac Okoro. Those three things happen the way you think they could. We roll the heads on each one of those three. How many wins did the Bulls get?
In the East, I think they could win 47 to 48 wins if those happen. I think the East is that bad.
It's funny. I kind of agree with you. My upside scenario for the Bulls is kind of about the same. Like, the thing is, I think, like, the odds are that I don't think we're going to get all the things I said. Like, I don't think we're going to get Coby and Giddey to play that way over the course of the season. But if they did, I think if they did, they might even be a 50-win team next year. Like, if Coby and Josh are those players post All-Star break for a whole season, I think they're a 50-win team. I really don't believe they are those players over a whole season, but if they are, I think they're a 50-win team. My actual prediction for this team is probably around 40 wins. Like, I'm shocked at where Vegas has them. I think they'll be, and a lot of that is just the East is so bad. Like, I still think they're probably going to be slotted in around like the 19th best team in the league. But, you know, like I said, 19th best team with an average age in like the mid 20s is a lot better than 19th best team where all your key guys are like 33. So if they maintain that, like, that's a more hopeful situation than they had previously.
I'm already in a good mood. Can you imagine that if this team somehow wins 50 games? How insane
is this?
I'm going to start acting.
First,
what
positive vibe podcast? Is this the first positive vibe podcast we've had in a while?
Well, that was the goal. That's what I wanted. It's the summer.
Yeah, things are looking up. I think you've achieved. You've achieved the goal. We're officially wearing Homer goggles. We're entering into camp wearing the Homer goggles. Like, not bad, not bad, Fred. Good work.
Thank you.
On driving us to the. You know, you got the bus on the highway right away. We were, you know, cruising down 290 as if it was 2 a.m. and there were no cops around. So,
you know, Doug, what's so crazy is, I mean, obviously you're aware of this, but the listeners aren't. I was on vacation for this last week and I had a lot of time to relax in the sun. It was fantastic. But when I was lying down, I was going through this in my mind. I'm like, I don't know, at some point, maybe on Thursday or maybe 4 or 5 margaritas in, I was saying, I don't think this is crazy. Like, I actually think the Bulls could win 47, 48 games. And I was kind of getting at that note. You know, obviously I'm uber high on Okoro and I know things that the average fan doesn't about how good this guy is. But, you know, like, Coby White being an All-Star this year, is that crazy? I don't think so. Not if he plays like he did in March. And if you're right, if Giddey plays like he did at the end of last year, suddenly you got like three really good players. And you know, we didn't get into what could go bad, but the other advantage I said is I really think this team is very could sustain injuries outside of Coby. Like, I brought up the Trey, you know, Trey Jones and I brought up, like, you know, is there a Miles, the difference between Julian Phillips and Patrick Williams? You could probably say, yeah, when it comes to hitting the three, but
I mean, I don't think I kind of hope neither of those guys play.
What's that? What did you say?
I hope neither of those guys play. I hope they're both on the bench, to be honest. Like, I hope Modest is just so good that Patrick Williams never sees the floor, and Noah Senge is so good that Patrick Williams never sees the floor. That would be.
I'm not even factoring Noah Senge into this. Like, I don't.
No, neither am I. I think he's going to play like 10 minutes a game.
Yeah,
and they're going to suck. Like, it's going to be like Modest last year. It's going to be a rough beginning, and you'll see some flashes and signs, and then you hope. Yeah. By the end of the year, you start seeing more and more signs, and then, you know, you look forward to the future.
Regardless, man, we should be excited. And after listening to this show, I hope everybody is too. The season can't start soon enough as we bring the Big Red Bus in. Let's rock right. and roll
we'll do,
with a 50-win team.
We'll do what could go wrong after game one of the regular season, because I think we'll have it all figured out then about everything that can go wrong if we – yeah. One weekend we'll do that episode. No, let's keep the positive vibes going until the regular season starts. We can, one weekend we'll have enough stuff to complain about, I'm sure. So let's just keep the rose colored glasses on for like another month and a half. Let's just be all in homers for, you know, the next 6 weeks. I think that's a fun way to live.
Well, surprisingly, I think I'm going to turn what you started to do. What could go wrong? You highlighted a few things. No matter what you say, I'm going to turn it around on you and say, this is how we're going to get over that. You know, so the only thing that I think would be definitely not be able to go over is if Giddey gets back to pre-All-Star ways. If he just plays the whole year like that, can you imagine what a downer that would be? Oh, my Lord. You know.
I don't think it's super likely. I think the...
Here do
the,
I.
I think we both said it. The worst-case scenario for Bulls, the Bulls is Coby White is unable to handle the role of being kind of like the full-time scorer, or that he gets hurt. Because they just don't really have any other options of guys who are going to be go-to guys. And Josh Giddey mitigates that somewhat because he's like a really good passer. And so the Bulls could probably flip into a more system style scoring. And then they'll just try to outrun teams and, you know, play in transition as much and like slop up the game as much as they can. So, you know, they do have some ways to get around the idea that they don't have a consistent maybe go-to scorer. But this season like really rests on Coby White. You know, I think like if Coby White is going to have to deliver in this kind of go-to scorer role for the Bulls to like hit the heights that we mentioned, because there's not really a lot of other options out there for them in terms of like generating buckets in the half court.
All right, my man, I got to hit the road, buddy. DT, it was always good to talk to you. What a great show for the summer. And man, I can't wait till next time after this positively fantastic episode. So until next time, let's go Bulls.
Go Bulls.